This is Brian Cambria with news for the KVNF listening area Thursday, November 1st, 2012. Not only is Colorado a key swing state in the presidential election, this fall voters will also be deciding on a host of other races and issues. For instance, whether to legalize marijuana, and down-ticket candidates that will determine the makeup of the Colorado State Legislature. Penta Berkland talks to State House reporters about what's at stake.
I'm here with Joe Hannell with the Durango Herald and Ed Sealover, a reporter for the Denver Business Journal. Joe, you've been covering the presidential race and attended the national conventions. Obviously, a lot of attention is focused on Colorado and its 9 electoral votes. Explain why this state is so important and how it figures into the larger electoral map.
The way I look at Colorado is kind of a second-tier battleground state. Everybody keeps talking about Ohio. And if Obama can win Ohio, Wisconsin, and, say, Nevada, where he's ahead in the polls and all of those, then it's game, set, match, and he wins it. But if he loses Ohio, then there is still a way for the president to be reelected, but he would absolutely have to win Colorado in just about every scenario if he loses Ohio. For Romney, Colorado's not an option. He needs to win this and several other battleground states in order to be elected.
And Joe, polls show that the race is pretty much a toss-up here. What do you think are going to be some of the key dynamics in the final days leading up to the election, and what will both campaigns be focused on?
Well, for anybody who hasn't voted yet, especially if you're an unaffiliated voter, you're probably getting phone calls, maybe even knocks at your door. That's part of the turnout game, people trying to get their voters to the polls. Beyond that, this is the time of year when everybody who's watching the race kind of becomes an amateur expert on the propensity of Latino voters in Pueblo to vote late and negate some of the early voting edge that Republicans have run up in the state so far. Before the election, they're trying to get people to the polls, and then for 72 hours, it just shifts into get everybody you can to the polls on election day. People will be offering rides.
And Ed, obviously there's also a lot at stake when it comes to the state legislature. Democrats have a 5-seat majority in the Senate, but Republicans only have a 1-seat majority in the House. A lot of things are in play with new state house districts coinciding with redistricting. I know you've been taking a close look at that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is the great races that people tend to forget about in a year like a presidential election year. But if you look at the Senate, the general opinion is that the Democrats will hold the Senate. They hold a 5-seat advantage now, but there's actually a way for the Republicans to victory. There are 4 seats that are generally viewed as being in play, and 3 of them are Democratic-held seats. Now, the Republicans would need to sweep all of those. Those include a Littleton area seat held by Senator Lyndon Newell, an Arvada area seat held by Senator Evie Hudak, and a new seat in southeast Colorado. And they would need to hold a South Jeffco area seat that's also a new carve-out but had been held by Republican Tim Neville. Most people think the chances of them sweeping all 4 of those are going to be a little tough, but most people also expect the Democrats to have a thinner margin in the Senate come 2013. Now, the House is still very much up in play. There seems to be an idea from a number of people that the Democrats are going to take this back. In fact, at one point, it was rumored that House Democratic leadership was talking about how to get to 40 seats, which is not a veto-proof majority, but one where they could pretty much run any bill they want through, lose a couple of their members, and still pass it. Now that tone is toned down, and there are about 8 or 9 seats that are really in play here. The Democrats are looking to take back, say, a Broomfield area seat that they lost 2 years ago that's now open, possibly an Aurora area seat held by Republican Cindy Acree that's been wildly redistricted. But just as much, the Republicans have a chance to take away a South Metro seat. Those are going to be things where I think if people have only had Obama and Romney campaigners knocking on their door, they're going to see a lot of their state reps if they live in these districts between now and Tuesday.
And of course, we've also got some congressional races. Joe, I know in your area, including the Western Slope, Congressional District 3, we've got Republican Scott Tipton, the incumbent, against Sal Pace, a Democrat who served in the state legislature.
That's been a real sleepy race. We were expecting that to be the number one race in Colorado at the beginning of the year, and it's really kind of slipped to the third most intense race behind District 6 and 7 in the metro area. At the moment, Pace is basically being outspent in that race. What little polling data has released shows it is a pretty tight race, but just about every national prognosticator puts it as a lean Republican district. So it looks as though Tipton does have the advantage going into Election Day there.
Just finally, Ed, I want to touch on the most controversial of the state's ballot initiatives, legalizing marijuana. Polls have shown it's kind of ebbing and flowing. It has a little more support than opposition.
Yeah, the Denver Post has done a good job of following this on its polls. One thing that is interesting to note is it still leads in support. It's slipped below 50% support. And generally, most people say that constitutional amendments don't pick up support as the campaign goes along. They lose it. So I think there's a little bit of a feeling that this is probably more likely to fail than to pass, but it's going to be really close, and the implications are very broad-reaching. There's another ballot initiative, Amendment S, which is Governor Hickenlooper's big push this year. It's to reform the way the state personnel system works. It was wildly supported in the state legislature, but it's going to be so buried by all these other issues, people might not know what it is, and put that one up in jeopardy when a great majority of people who know about it feel it should pass. So both will be very close to watch on election night.
Great. Thank you so much. That was Ed Sealover with the Denver Business Journal and Joe Hannell with the Durango Herald. I'm Benta Berkland in Denver.
The Colorado County Clerks Association is reminding voters to return mail ballots before the end of Election Day. All ballots returned by November 6th will be counted. Local county clerks are contacting people who returned a mail ballot with either a missing signature on the envelope or a signature that does not appear to match the voter's signature on file. Any mail ballot voter with a signature issue can work with their clerk to resolve the ballot and ensure the votes are counted. Ballots that are mailed or returned on or before Election Day can be resolved up to 8 days after Election Day. You can track the progress of your mail ballot at www.govotecolorado.com. If you have any questions or concerns, contact your county clerk and recorder's office. 100,000 Coloradans have medical marijuana licenses now. Still, even though more patients can legally buy pot, arrests are up by 7%. And data shows that minorities are arrested at higher rates than whites, even though they use the drug less. With an amendment to legalize marijuana on the ballot this fall, Colorado Public News' Carol McKinley takes a look at this controversial issue.
Despite more lenient laws, the Colorado Bureau of Investigation says over 10,000 Coloradans were arrested for marijuana possession last year. 20-year-old Jeff Bobitsky of Arvada was one of them.
And we were just smoking bowls pretty much, and cop pulls up and the car was pretty much clam-baked, so I had to admit to something because you can't just roll down the windows and all the smoke coming out. Oh, I don't have anything.
Bobitsky says he's been lighting up every day since he was 15. One might think he would be all for Amendment 64, a ballot issue that would legalize marijuana in Colorado, but he's undecided, worried about government and private business getting involved.
Would like to have it kind of like alcohol, because that would be nice to go into a store to purchase it or whatever, but then I worry about the quality.
Weld County District Attorney Ken Buck believes making the entire marijuana industry legal is a big mistake, especially since it's being offered up as a constitutional amendment, which is binding.
If the legislature decided they wanted to reduce the amount or to put other restrictions on it, they can't do it because this is now going to be a constitutional right.
But proponents of Amendment 64 believe taxing pot will mean much-needed funding for schools and will keep the courts from spending precious hours policing people like Jeff Bobitsky.
Yeah, we are really trying to change our broken marijuana laws.
Brian Vicente, co-director of the PRO campaign, says even though most people caught with pot get a citation and not jail time, that citation can be a scarlet letter.
If that individual is found guilty, as many people are, they then have a Class 2 petty offense, which is a criminal offense, conviction on their record. And that is very accessible to potential employers, that's accessible to the government, that's accessible to schools when people are applying there, applying to be in the military.
If you believe the polls, there's a good chance the measure will pass. That will mean Colorado police won't arrest for marijuana anymore, only federal officers. The NAACP and the ACLU are endorsing the amendment. They say marijuana enforcement is stacked against minorities.
We see this as a civil rights issue.
That's Rosemary Harris Lytle, president of the regional NAACP. One study using FBI statistics shows in Colorado over the past 10 years, African Americans were arrested three times more than whites for pot use, even though they use the drug less. ACLU Public Policy Director Denise Mace says Hispanics are in the same boat, estimated to have been arrested at 1.5 times more than whites.
The war on drugs, if it has been successful by any measure, it is this. It has placed in our criminal justice system a disproportionate number of Latinos and African Americans.
Opponents say there are other ways to deal with discrimination besides throwing out the whole law. Ken Buck is worried most about what will happen to kids if marijuana becomes more available.
What's going to happen in our schools particularly, we're going to see increased dropout rates and we're going to see decreased test scores as a result of more kids smoking marijuana.
Amendment 64 would keep the prohibition on driving under the influence of marijuana and on using it in public. Carol McKinley, Colorado Public News.
KVNF covered this and the other two statewide ballot issues on a call-in show last week. To hear it, including various local perspectives on Amendment 64, visit our website at kvnf.org. Colorado and Nevada are two swing states characterized by vast amounts of federal land. That makes public lands policies an issue that could help decide the election. The White House is touting an increase in energy production on public lands over the last 4 years, but it's not winning any friends from the industry. From KOTO in Telluride, Stephen Barrett has this report.
The Obama administration has walked a tightrope when it comes to public lands. But finding a balance between environmental protection and energy independence has been challenging for a Democratic White House. A case in point is the Deepwater Horizon disaster in the Gulf of Mexico 2 years ago. That oil spill led to a 6-month moratorium in offshore drilling. During the second presidential debate, Governor Mitt Romney seized on the resulting decrease in production.
Production on private on government land
is
down.
No, it isn't.
Production on government land of oil is down 14%. And production on gas
is
down 9%.
It's just not true.
It's absolutely true.
No one watched that back and forth more intently than Interior Secretary Ken Salazar.
Frankly, the exchange was to me very disconcerting because Mitt Romney was misrepresenting the reality on the ground. One of the things that Governor Romney said is that oil and gas production were down on public lands. That's not true. We're up 13% over the last 3 years. We are moving forward with oil and gas production in the Gulf and in the offshore as well as in the onshore of the United States, and I'm responsible for that.
As a U.S. senator, Salazar was critical of the Bush administration's public lands policies. One of his first acts as Interior Secretary was to withdraw 77 parcels in Utah that had been made available for drilling. Some of them were within close proximity to national parks and municipal water sources. Salazar says the current administration has taken a much more restrained approach.
We don't think that you ought to be punching holes in places that are sensitive, that need environmental protection. We don't believe that you ought to be allowing oil and gas to occur in the vicinity of Arches National Park or other crown jewels. And so our program has been to be smart from the start. We're allowing drilling to occur, but it has to be done in the right places.
That's not what energy producers want to hear. Tim Wigley is the president of Western Energy Alliance, a group that represents more than 400 companies in 13 states.
This administration has not been friendly to the oil and natural gas industries.
Wigley faults the Obama administration for lengthy reviews of drilling permits, new studies of where drilling should be allowed, and stipulations that restrict where it can take place on approved parcels. Wigley says energy production may be up on public lands, but it's paltry compared to what's taking place elsewhere in the country.
Look at the states that are growing, North Dakota, Texas, Oklahoma, places where you've got large tracts of private and state lands that they're tapping into those resources. We could be doing the same thing for the entire West, but we have an administration that has burdened us with an incredible regulatory regime. It gets worse and worse every year.
The Western Energy Alliance supports Romney's proposal to give states more say over energy production on federal lands. But environmental groups say that approach fails to recognize their broader value. Pete Maysmith is the executive director of Colorado Conservation Voters.
We choose to live in Colorado, live and work and play, because this is a state with such unparalleled beauty. And our public lands are a piece of that, a significant piece of that. And so making sure that they are protected, and when energy development happens on them, we need to make sure it's done right.
Maysmith says the Obama administration has corrected what he characterizes as the excesses of the Bush White House.
In the previous administration, we saw a rush to throw open the gates to federal lands. It was really kind of a modern-day gold rush, if you will, of, you know, y'all come on in and start drilling. And this administration has absolutely made sure that energy production is happening and happening at a very high level on public lands, but is being more thoughtful about it when it comes to environmental protections.
Wigley says that position is based on a single premise.
He's framing this issue as an either-or. You're either going to protect the land or you're going to somehow harm the land. We've proven for generations that you can have safe, science-based, common-sense energy production on federal lands, and at the same time protect species, protect habitat, protect wildlife.
But when it comes to public lands, Salazar says too much is at stake to leave them to the energy industry.
We believe that our public lands are iconic values for our natural heritage in the United States, but they're also huge economic contributors. Hiking and biking and hunting and fishing and rafting and all of the things that we do in the outdoors create over 6 million jobs a year here in the United States. And those are jobs that can be exported. Those are jobs that are here. And so it's been one of the top priorities that the president has assigned to me. And we've been working very hard on that agenda across the country.
Salazar says he's been privileged to work in the Obama administration, but he says no decision has been reached whether he would continue to serve as Interior Secretary if the president is reelected next week. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, I'm Stephen Barrett.
The Republican Party's vice presidential candidate, Paul Ryan, is in Colorado again. Ryan is to attend the rally in Greeley today, then will address supporters in a brief rally at the Montrose Regional Airport Friday before heading off to other rallies in Iowa and Ohio later in the day tomorrow. The event will be held at the Black Canyon Jet Center. Doors open at 8, but the program won't start until 10:30 a.m. For those interested, tickets are available at mittromney.com/co. Palisades Police Chief has left his position under pressure from the town administrator. The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel reports that as of last Wednesday, longtime Chief Carol Quarles was no longer employed. A high-ranking Grand Junction police officer will head up Palisades Police Department in the coming months. Town Administrator Rich Sales told the Sentinel that he offered Quarles a resignation last week, but declined to discuss the reasons why. 60-year-old Quarles confirmed his departure with the Sentinel, saying, quote, "It became clear my services were no longer required," end quote. Quarles added that he's enjoyed making Palisade a safe community, but this is his last law enforcement job. Quarles held this position for 17 years. Grand Junction Police Department Commander Mike Nordine, who heads Grand Junction's Investigations Division, is expected to start as Palisades' interim chief on Monday. Sales told the Sentinel that the town is writing a job description for its next chief of police, which will involve at least a statewide hiring process. The Sentinel reports that Grand Junction will continue to pay Nordine's salary while he's working in Palisade. Nordine has indicated he's not interested in the chief's job. The Sentinel reports that Palisade Town trustees said they were clueless about the reason behind Quarles' departure. Meanwhile, elsewhere on the Western Slope, Basalt Police Chief Roderick O'Connor has been placed on paid leave by town administrators for unspecified reasons. The Glenwood Springs Post-Independent says town attorney Tom Smith confirmed that O'Connor remains the police chief, but is currently on paid leave. Smith said an investigation is underway, but he declined to discuss its nature, citing town policy on personnel issues. Basalt Town Government's chain of command is in flux right now. A new town manager was hired Monday, but won't take the helm until early December. Former manager Bill Kane is still working with the town as a consultant. Both Kane and Basalt Mayor Jackie Whitsitt declined comment and referred questions to Town Attorney Smith. Winter recreationalists hoping for a heavy snow season ahead may not get their wish. No Niño will be coming from the Pacific Ocean this winter, according to climate experts, meaning they're not quite sure what the winter forecast has in store. The Telluride Daily Planet reports that for months this summer, patterns unfolding in the equatorial Pacific Ocean led forecasters to believe that El Niño, which typically creates wetter weather for the southern U.S., was expected for the upcoming winter. But in the last month, the patterns tapered off. Joe Ramey, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service's Grand Junction Station, told the Planet that this winter has a neutral pattern. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration forecasters say that makes this year's winter outlook less certain than previous years. Ramey says No Niño's years are a wild card and have a tendency to be extreme. And finally, Forest Service officials are still managing several active wildfires in southwestern Colorado and want to remind forest visitors and hunters that the 2012 fire season is not yet over. Even with the change of seasons, the potential for wildland fires is still high, given the current and forecasted dry weather. This concludes the KVNF Morning Newscast. For KVNF News, I'm Brian Cambria.